Hey, fighters, before we get started with today's episode, I want to invite you to text the two words contractor fight to 877-807-1740 and get more connected to what we have going on here to help you build a better business. 877-807-1740 and the two words contractor fight. All right, fighters, today I'm excited to have Todd DeWalt back on the show. He's the guy over at the Construction Leading Edge podcast where he interviews and brings a ton of great content for the construction industry. I just wanted to have him on. We just basically took some time to shoot the shit about what's going on in the world. We got into what it really means to take advantage of these opportunities right now with our new normal, how to sharpen your own axe and make sure that you're using this time to grow. And then he shares what he feels is just a simple two-word question that has made him hundreds of thousands of dollars just by asking this simple two-word question that you guys will hear as part of this interview as well. So without further ado, here's Todd DeWalt.
If you're wondering where should you start if you want to sharpen your axe, then nail the handle. Let's go figure out what the profit bleeds are and stick your finger in that bleeder. Let's figure out how to keep the profit.
Do you feel you should be further along in your contracting business? Are you tired of not making the money that you know that you're worth? Or maybe you're winning, but you just want to win at a higher level. I'm Tom Reber, and this is the Contractor Fight. Turn this shit up and get ready to earn more respect, earn more money, and be a better leader in your business. Oh, and P.S., this show is not for thin-skinned people. If you offend easily or have a victim mentality, you should probably just move the fuck on right now. Let's go.
Todd, welcome back to the Contractor Fight. How you doing, man?
Doing great. Thanks for having me back, Tom.
Yeah, it's been close to, I don't know, 8, 10, 12 months, something like that, since you were here before, and we talked about some systems and things like that. But there's a lot going on in the world right now. I'm seeing you every day going crazy, adding tons of value on your podcast, Construction Leading Edge, and also on LinkedIn, man. I've upped my LinkedIn game over the last month or two, and can't help but notice you got a lot of good things going on there. It seems like every time I turn around, you're sharing a good resource with people to be able to stay ahead of all this garbage going on in the world, man. So what's going on in your world?
What's going on in my world? Everything just sort of got thrown up into the air about 6 or 8 weeks ago, the beginning, middle of March. And everybody's just trying to figure out what the hell's going on and what they should be doing. So I've been trying to keep people. One of my main goals over the past couple of months has been let's not end up in the fetal position, rocking back and forth in the corner because of this and get paralyzed with fear. Let's at least be neutral. But I've been talking a lot about what are the opportunities because of this coronavirus? What are the new problems that need to be solved? How can you use this as a time to sharpen the saw? You know, one of the things that I hear all the time is, you know, I'm too busy. I don't have time to do this. I don't have time to review my contracts or figure out how to charge for change orders or train my people. Well, you know what everybody has a lot of right now? It's time. So what I'm telling people is, hey, look, if you don't think you're going to survive this thing, then just go ahead and fold it up and go look for a job. Just quit now. But if you plan to be in business when the doors open back up, which hopefully will be in the not too distant future, then start looking at this as an opportunity and look for the new problems that are being created. Look for the disruption that's happening. And then if you're sitting at home and you can't work, then, you know, there's an old saying that Abraham Lincoln, at least according to the internet, Abe Lincoln said, if I've got 6 hours to cut down a tree, I'm going to spend 4 hours sharpening the axe. So if you plan on cutting some trees down in the future, this is a good time to sharpen your axe and get better personally, put systems in place, clean things up, get your operation in order so that when things do open back up, you're going to be at least caught up with the competition. Definitely not behind, but hopefully you'll come out ahead.
So you mentioned a couple times the word opportunity. And I'm curious. Well, let me set this question up a little better here. The one of the things I've heard from a few people is I can't wait till things are back to normal. I can't wait till things are back to normal. And I personally don't think it will ever be the normal that we had before. I think there'll be a new normal. And I'm curious, what opportunities do you see being part of the, whatever that new normal is?
Yeah.
That you might not see right now.
Well, anytime there's a crisis, there are opportunities. Yeah, there were opportunities that came out of the 2008 crisis. And I read this book called Rock the Recession a few months ago and actually interviewed the author. And there's this line, there's a quote from a guy named Rob Strobel. He's the president of a big commercial concrete outfit based out of Ohio called Lithco Contracting. Big commercial. They did a 250,000 square foot distribution center for me a few years ago, and that was not a big project for them. So these guys do big stuff, like million square foot flat work type projects. And the line in this book that caught my attention was, when asked about the next recession, Rob Strobel said, quote, "It can't get here fast enough." And I was like, wait a minute. Wait, let me read that again. It can't get here. The next recession can't get here fast enough. So that caught my attention. I started looking at it because my approach to recessions is there's nothing good about them. They suck. You just have to, it's sort of like a hurricane. You just need to hunker down, somehow survive. And if you come out alive, then good for you. But as I went through this book, I realized there are people that look at recessions very differently, and it's all a matter of preparing. So Lithco had gotten their stuff together before the 2008 recession. And during that recession, they were able to pick up talent and buy equipment at a discount, grab market share, and buy out other companies who were their competitors before. And they grew through the recession. So it's all a matter of how you look at it and when you prepare for the recession. So right now, some of the opportunities I see, if you're in a good financial position, then you can pick up talent. I know people, one of my clients, he's an electrician in Oklahoma. He's picked up some great talent from the oil fields because oil prices go down to minus $37 a barrel. That's pretty tough. And yeah, they laid a lot of people off. So if you have the resources and you're ready to pounce on these opportunities, you can pick up, for one, good talent. This is a great opportunity to pick up talent. Some other people I'm working with, they're trying to grab lead carpenters right now. And there are a lot of people sitting at home. It's a great time to recruit, either from the hospitality industry, the food service industry, the oil field industry. It's a time to jump on opportunities. So that's one of the opportunities that's being created right now that people have the opportunity to jump on.
Yeah, I love that. And, you know, when I look back at the last, you know, the recession in 08 and stuff, I can look back and there were two things that stand out that I actually, that were a benefit to me. One is I learned how to market better with less money. And it really dipped my toe into the whole content marketing world, which is the base of everything I've done since. And so I'm super grateful for that. And I'm also grateful it was a time that caused me to look in the mirror and step up my leadership game. And I became a better leader. And so, you know, there's an old quote, I don't know who originally said it. I've heard it, you know, podcasts and things like that for years, but it's, what is it? Life doesn't happen to you. It happens for you. Mm-hmm. And that's, sometimes it's easy to kind of roll your eyes when you hear a quote like that. But I think if you're really paying attention, you can always find the lessons in, you know, no matter what is happening, you know, in our lives. And I just encourage people not to view this Corona thing and anything going on in the economy and anything they're struggling with. Don't view it right now as something that's happening to you, but do exactly what you talked about and really try to spot these opportunities to, you know, to take advantage of that. So you also mentioned earlier about, you know, the old Abe Lincoln thing about sharpening the axe. What are some things that you would recommend to some people? What does that look like, sharpening the axe right now?
the number one thing I've been talking about a lot is, well, it, you know, if we look at what people were hoarding a few months ago, when maybe it was 6 weeks ago when the coronavirus hit, suddenly there was the shortage of toilet paper. And mm-hmm. you know, 3 months ago when I walked through the store, I didn't pay any attention to the toilet paper aisle. But in the middle of March, early April, every time I walked through, I was looking at the toilet paper aisle because there was scarcity. And I was like, I'm not sure there's going to be toilet paper. So if I see some, I'm going to grab it. Now, I didn't go grab 10 cases. You know, I'm not a hoarder. I'm not sure that I would have if it was available. But my point was, 3 months ago, I wasn't concerned about the future availability of toilet paper. But then suddenly things changed. And 3 months ago, people were so busy. If they weren't making money on their projects, if they were bleeding profit, they would say, well, you know what, we'll make it up on the next one. I've got a full pipeline. I've got a full backlog. I'm busier than ever. And I'll just make it up on the next one. Make it up in volume, right? Well, things are changing now. So whatever you've got in backlog, my advice is to hoard the profit that you have in your backlog, because we're not sure what's going to happen. There's going to be some sort of a dip. If you're a commercial contractor, that dip could come 6 to 9 months down the road. If you're doing big institutional projects, it could be a little further out. If you're a residential contractor, maybe that dip is hitting right now, but there will be some kind of dip. And my advice is hoard the profit that's in your backlog and put yourself in a position where you've got some resources in your war chest to survive. Because if there's a gap in your backlog and you hit some sort of a dry spell, you're going to need that money to be able to survive. So what I realized over the past couple of years as I talked to contractors and look back on projects and businesses that I've run, I realized that contractors are bleeding profit at an alarming rate. So every week I talk to a few guys and I started asking them, all right, tell me about, let's look at how much money you're losing on rework every month. And what about productivity? What about quality issues? What about doing work for free, change order work that you're not getting paid for? And when you add that up, it gets pretty alarming. Guys actually get a little sick to their stomach sometimes when they add up how much money a year they're bleeding out. And I did a podcast episode to highlight this issue. It's episode 156 on my podcast. And I just walked through a very typical contractor that does about $1 million in revenue a year. They have 5 full-time employees, and I went through 8 profit bleeds that totaled over $100,000 that they're bleeding in lost productivity, rework, material losses, schedule overruns. When you total it all up, it's $100,000 a year. And that was pretty conservative. That was not based on really aggressive numbers. And I've seen it. I've been on projects where I knew the contractors were bleeding out profit because of poor planning and poor scheduling and just a variety of things. So if you're wondering, all right, I want to sharpen my axe, what should I do? I would put systems in place. Well, let's not even talk about systems. Let's go figure out what the profit bleeds are and stick your finger in that bleeder. Let's figure out how to keep the profit from, it's in your backlog right now. It was in the estimate. You get a contract signed. Every contract has a certain amount of backlog, and it's your job to finish that project and keep the backlog or keep the profit in there. So it goes from your backlog to your contract to your bank account. And you do that with good planning, good scheduling, training your people. If people ask me, well, where should I start? It really comes down to 3 words. I set with contractors from big commercial contractors from Nebraska and South Dakota and Orlando, and worked with residential contractors all over the company. And I realized there's one particular phase of a project that you can focus on, and it will help you keep a lot of the profit. And that's the handoff. So the handoff from sales to the field, from pre-construction to project manager, from estimating to execution, wherever that handoff is. If you can nail the handoff, if you can make sure that the guys in the field have everything that they need, they have all the decisions made, all the selections, the designs complete, all the questions are answered, materials ordered, they know who to talk to, they know where to go if they have questions. If you can nail the handoff, then that's going to prevent the majority of the problems that lead to profit bleeds. So that's what I would, if you're wondering where should you start if you want to sharpen your axe, then nail the handoff. Come up with a handoff checklist that answers the question, what does a properly handed off project look like? What do the guys in the field need so that they're not circling back and they're not trying to figure stuff out, they're not calling people to find out who to call and that kind of stuff. Have a handoff checklist, have a handoff meeting, and hand that project off to the people in the field, and you'll be amazed at what happens. And the way I think about it, when I bought my truck a couple of years ago, I sat with at the dealership, and they had a stack of papers. They had a checklist of forms that had to be filled out, right? Or when you buy a piece of real estate, the title company comes in, they've got this closing checklist. And if there's 27 things on that checklist and you check off 26, you're not closing on that loan. You're not driving that truck home. And that's the way you should think about handing off a project, is if there's 16 things on your project handoff checklist, then it's your job, if you're the business owner or the project manager, to check off all 16 boxes before you hand it off to the guys in the field. And if you do that, that's going to prevent a lot of the problems and a lot of the chaos and a lot of the tail chasing and rework and lost productivity and that sort of thing. So that's where I would tell people to start if you want to sharpen your axe.
And that's huge, because so many times first of all, you're basically, with this handoff, you are, you're not putting your people in the field in a position to have to read your mind. It's, you know, what was he thinking with the scope? I mean, I come from the painting industry, and this is a lesson. My first business partner years and years ago, I remember one time he just let me have it, and rightly so, because I was doing the sales and I put this new job in the folder, whatever we had. And then he would call to schedule the job that, you know, he handled the operations. And then on the phone, the customer, and this is residential stuff way back in the day, but you get the point here. The customer would say something like, yeah, we're really excited to have you guys get in here and get it done, you know, by such and such date. And my partner was totally caught off guard because he was calling with a different date, and it just made it look like we didn't communicate. You know, didn't look in it, and he was embarrassed. He got tired of getting sideswiped by stuff. And that actually became eventually one of our big strengths of our company, was the way we would communicate and hand a project off. And it started because he would not call to schedule a job unless all those boxes were checked that you were talking about. Mm-hmm. And it was on me as the sales guy, estimator, whatever you want to call it, to make sure those boxes were checked. And I'm talking like signed contract, deposit check, you know, there was we called it a note sheet, but just whatever notes are important for whoever's going to be doing the job to know. So for instance, one of those things might be, we ran into a lot of this stuff residentially, was the father-in-law lives there and he has emphysema. Okay. That's kind of a big deal. And you kind of need to know that if you're going to be in there sanding and shit like that, you know. Mm-hmm. Or there was another one where, you know, I see this a lot. Sometimes as a salesperson, I always come at things from a sales and marketing perspective. But like as a salesperson, it's our job to really find the client's motive and their pain or pleasure that they're after for having the project done, right? There's always those reasons they buy from you. And I found that if I did not communicate the reasons somebody bought from us to my team in the field, then they did not have a great experience with us. So for instance, one example was this one woman. I said to her, I said, how are you going to know you hired the right contract? You know, it's one of those questions, you know, when this thing's all said and done, how are you going to know, you know, that we were the right company for you? And she says, something to the effect of, you don't wake up my twins.
Mm.
And she had two like really young newborn kind of twins. And I said, well, tell me more about that. And she's like, yeah, I never get any sleep. The only time they sleep is between like 1:30 and 3 every day. And so I said, hey, would it make sense if we just started later and put our lunchtime in there? We'll take a longer lunch. We'll go off site, you know, for an hour, hour and a half. You call the crew leader or text the crew leader when the kids wake up and we'll come back. That way there was no shot of us waking her kids up, right? And that was the reason she bought up from us. And had I not communicated that to the crew, you know, it would have just been a mess. We would have been the typical contractor.
Yeah, that's a really good point. There's so many customers who end up with a bad experience. They feel like they got the bait and switch. They mm-hmm. feel like they had this great relationship with the sales guy. And then it just gets handed over to this dickhead of a superintendent or the lead guy who doesn't know anything about what they talked about. And then the customer's like, I got to reinvent the wheel. I've got to tell him everything that I already told this other guy. Why am I telling you this again? And I've done this being on the owner's rep side on commercial projects. You spend months on big projects working with the pre-construction guys and the business development guys, and they're taking you out and whining and dining you. And then you end up with this guy that walks into the trailer one day and he got assigned to the project and he doesn't know mm-hmm. anything. None of that information got translated. Mm-hmm. And as a customer, that's really frustrating. So that's a great point. That is an amazing question, first of all, in the sales process is how are you going to know you picked the right contractor? And that's like, it's like them back in school. If you flip back to the back of the book and you saw the test answers,
yeah,
they're giving you the answers. They're telling you this is what's important.
It's really that simple. And I always try to paint a picture for people. And, you know, I'll say, hey, Todd, at some point you're going to be signing I try to put them visually in the movie, right? I'll go, Todd, at some point you're going to be standing at your kitchen island cutting a check to somebody and you're going to hand it to them and they're going to pull away and you got this new kitchen or whatever. What would need to happen for you to feel that was the best experience you ever had with a contractor? Mm. And just shut your mouth. And they will tell you everything that's important. And there's usually deeper things that come up than what you thought were important to them. And that's how that whole twins thing played out for me years ago, was I asked a question similar to that. And because again, people buy for their reasons, not mm-hmm. our reasons.
Yeah.
And so it's up to us as a salesperson to find those reasons. All right, fighters, $100,000 a year is not too much to ask. Listen, when our parents were younger, 100 grand was a lot of money. When I was growing up, 100 grand was a lot of money. Today, it's barely enough to get by in America, especially if you're a business owner. You got a lot of responsibilities. Everyone's got a handout, man. You got your subs, your employees, your vendors, your customers, your family, the doctor, your lawyer, the IRS, the state. Everybody wants a piece of the damn action, and quite frankly, the bills are never going to stop. Okay. Sadly, most contractors just think I got to work harder and harder and harder and harder to make more money. Yet you're putting in all this time, putting in all this effort, and you're wondering why am I still at 50, 60, 75 grand a year when I'm working my ass off. Listen, that's where I wanted to share with you guys a resource that we have, a kick-ass program called the 100K Contractor. Guys, this program is designed to do just that. It's to get you as a contractor business owner to at least $100,000 a year in personal income. All right. So I want to just share this domain with you guys because listen, at the end of the day, you deserve it. Your family deserves it. It's time we quit stealing from our families. We've got a lot of cool stuff inside the 100K Contractor. So if you go to thecontractorfight.com/100K-contractor, you can see what we got going on. We've got a couple of videos where things get explained and get you guys set up on the right path toward your 100K personal income. You guys rock. You mentioned you did a show where you had 8 or so profit bleeds, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's maybe one or two other ones that could be some low-hanging fruit for somebody who's listening to this?
Low-hanging fruits
that they just might not think of, they might miss, they, you know, that could be like, wow, it's, you know, for me, it was literally having a weekly meeting, an operations meeting, just going, what's the status of every job? And that thing alone, you know, raised our gross profit 5 to 10% within a month.
Yeah. So handoff would be huge. I'll tell you another one is, this wasn't really a profit bleed, but it's a huge missed opportunity. There, I have a two word question that has made me hundreds of thousands of dollars over the course of my career. And I would say it would do the same thing for a lot of remodelers, a lot of residential contractors, commercial contractors. It doesn't matter. If people are giving you money to solve problems, then you owe it to yourself and them to ask this two-word question. And it is this: what else? So I'm talking about upselling.
Yep.
When somebody has made the emotional decision, they've gotten over the emotional hurdles to, and in my experience, the vast majority of the buying process is emotional. Don't believe that it's logical. I think this is something I missed it for a long time. But when somebody has made the emotional decision to move forward with a project, then all you have to do is say those two words: what else? What else can we do for you? What else is bothering you? And then, like you said, just be quiet. And, well, you know, I'm thinking about doing this. And then ask questions. Why is that? How would you use that space? What would be the best part about that? How would life be different? And if I believe you could probably boost your top line, I don't know, 5 to 10% a year.
Easily.
Just by, yeah, saying those two words. What else? What else? I've done this with government clients. It works with everybody because they have problems and they think, well, we think that our clients understand everything we do. Mm-hmm. But I can't tell you how many times I've asked that question and somebody would say, oh, I didn't know you did that.
Isn't that crazy? I was driving, I've told this story on the show here 1,000 times probably, but I was driving by this woman's house who hired me. Oh, over the course of 4 years, probably paid us $50,000 to $60,000 to paint inside her house. Okay. And I'm driving by her house one day, just cause, and my biggest competitor's painting her exterior.
Oh man.
I'm like, so I called her up and I'm like, hey, it's Tom. She's like, hey, how you doing? She's all happy. I'm like, what's going on? Why is so-and-so painting your house? I just drove by and she goes, what do you mean? I said, he's painting your exterior. I thought it was your guy. She goes, I didn't know you painted outside. Right. And I'm just like, how do you not know that we do that? But it's on us, right?
Right.
And had I just asked that question, had I had a, you know, email marketing campaign going or drip campaign that just said, hey, did you know? And so that actually led us to a whole did you know thing with every customer. Hey, did you know we also repair drywall? Did you know we also pressure wash? Did you know? And we also trained our foreman. I think that your question of what else is amazing because it's doesn't just have to be on the salesperson. You can train your people in the field, your foreman running the job to just go. And this is something I got from somebody else years ago, so I can't take credit for it. But it was, how did it go? Hey, Tom, you know, say Tom was your sales guy, right? And now, or estimator, now he's not there and the crew's out there. It would sound like this: hey, Todd, is there anything else that you wished you would have brought up with when Tom was here that, you know, you haven't?
Mm-hmm.
And it, you just kind of go third party, because, or another variation could be, you know, you're the foreman. You're like, hey, Todd, I know we've been here a couple days now. And was there anything else that is, I mean, I'm just butchering this right now because I'm going off something else, but it's that simple question that you just said that, like you said, has made you a ton of money. And you got to train your people to do that. You got to tell your people it's okay to have those conversations. They need to know, I don't know if you have a little price sheet or whatever it is, but your people should be equipped to upsell. I've seen companies, one guy I know does $1.5 million a year and $500,000 of that is upsells from two of his foremen
mm-hmm.
every year, like clockwork. And that's high, high margin work. because what I found is your people usually sell the work at a higher margin than your sales guy does, because your sales guy's getting beat up, you know, and he's having to play all these games. He's got all this head stress. Your guy in the field, you know, you just tell them what it costs and they're like, okay. And they tell the client and you sell it. So.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, a couple of other ways to use that what else question, that eliminate problems and profit bleeds. One of the problems I've found is that people get handcuffed to projects. They have schedule overruns, right? So they've got this project. It was a $10,000 project that's supposed to last a week. And then on the last day, they say this question that a lot of people just hate, which is, hey, while you're here, can you put some furniture together for me? And you're like, well, yeah, I guess I'll charge like $48 an hour to put furniture together. And that doesn't cover your cost. That doesn't cover, it might cover your labor cost, but it doesn't cover your overhead. And it definitely doesn't cover the profit that you could be making on the next project that you should be going to. So anytime you do that while you're here type stuff at a really low rate, you're getting hammered by opportunity cost. A two-man crew should be doing like $1,500 to $2,000 a day in revenue, right?
Yep.
So what I found is time and materials work. If you're not really looking at your T&M rates and analyzing them, chances are, well, let's put it this way. 95% of the people I talk to, their T&M rates are too low. Their hourly rates are too low. They can't make money at hourly rates. So the right time to ask that what else question is right after they've signed the contract and before you get started. Hey, like you said, is there what else would you like to get done that Tom didn't ask you about? I love that approach. Yep. Don't put it on them. Don't say, what can I do for you? It's like this objective. What else would make sense for us to do while you're here? And they're like, yeah. And then at some point in the project, you're going to reach a point where you can't incorporate any more changes without having a schedule overrun.
Right.
So at that point, you got to realize, like, okay, maybe it's, if you're doing remodeling, it's before finished paint. And you let them know, hey, just so you know, if there's anything else that you'd like to add to this project, we can do it up until this point. And you set that deadline for changes that prompts them to think about it early, sets the expectation that if you do have to stay and do that while you're here stuff, it's going to be pretty expensive. And it will eliminate that schedule overrun.
It's funny. Remind me of one of my remodeler buddies who, when a massively profitable remodeling company, and he would ask right at the contract signing, basically the what else question in a yes, it in a different way, but he would actually communicate to them. He'd say, Todd, a lot of times we get into somebody's house, we start the project, they want to start making changes. And then we start adding things. Mm-hmm. And he says, and that's perfectly normal. And he said, and he did this with humor, so everyone always had a good time with it. But he would basically say, Todd, I just want you to know that if you make any changes after I leave here today, it's going to be brutally expensive and you're going to be really mad at me of how much money it costs you. Because every time we make a change, it jacks up the whole damn schedule. And it's really, really expensive. And he would go overboard communicating how expensive it was going to be. And a couple things happened. A lot of times people would add stuff right there on the spot that was on their mind. And then later in projects, people would come to him and say, hey, I know this is going to cost me an arm and a leg, but we really want this. So it took away that whole price objection, you know, sticker shock, them being, you know, and their projects ran a lot more smoothly and with less changes and all that stuff because he set the table up front.
Absolutely. So I think that's where a lot of problems come from is anchoring. People don't understand the concept of anchoring. And if you're listening and you're not familiar with this, then anchoring is this human tendency to put way too much emphasis on the first piece of information we hear. And we do it. Most contractors do it all the time. Somebody will say, hey, can you give me a ballpark number? Or how long do you think it'll take to build this thing? Like no written scope, no details, no design or anything like that. And we're like, yeah, well, we want to be Johnny on the spot. So we throw out some ballpark number based on a bunch of assumptions. And then they say, yeah, let's move forward. And then over the course of weeks or months, they completely change the scope. It gets three times bigger and much more complicated. And then you give them an estimate, and what are they going to say?
Yeah, that's way more than you said it was.
Yeah, but you said, yep. You told me, like, it's anchoring, and you want to use anchoring to your benefit. So like your buddy was talking about, he anchored the clients at the beginning and told them, this is, it's going to be expensive. It's going to be painful. And he dropped that anchor, and then that set the expectation. So yeah, understand, man, the head game stuff, the psychology of selling. I don't know that there's, if you are selling, then my advice would be go understand the psychology of selling. Go read one of the best books that I've listened to recently is Chris Voss's book,
Never Split the Difference.
Yep. Oh man, so good, so good. But understand how the brain works, how your brain works, how your customer's brain is working, and that's where the game is won or lost right there. But yeah, to go back to your question, other low-hanging fruit is ask what else. What else can we do for you? That's high margin. You're already there. Your overhead is covered. You can incorporate a few more percentage points, or maybe 10%. But the key is just to make sure that you do it while you're doing everything else. And you can have, if nothing else, asking what else is going to give you a fully baked, well thought out scope of work to start with that you can hand off to your people and eliminate a lot of the wasted time and a lot of the gyration and changes that people come up with.
I love it, man. Final thoughts, man. Anything that's on your mind you feel you really want to share with people today that'll help them, not just make it through whatever's going on now with Corona and all that stuff with that, but just in general, or it could be that specific or just in general, what comes to mind?
I would say what comes to mind is just make a freaking decision. Just
tell me more. Where's that coming from, man? It sounds like it's you're seeing that as a problem.
Yeah, I see a lot of people who are saying, you know, I'm going to try this. I'm going to try to make my business successful. We're going to try to get through this thing. We're going to try to grow. I'm going to try to get better at running my business. And trying doesn't work. And what I've found, I'm a guy that I tried stuff for a long time. And I used to think that outside circumstances or my upbringing or the competition or the economy or somebody else was responsible for my success or my failure. And I would try something and run into some resistance or objections, or it wouldn't be a huge hit right off the bat. And then I would jump to something else. And I did that for a long time. And what I realized is it's not about the idea. It's not about your upbringing. It's not about the government. It really comes down to two things. You make a decision of what you want and what your results are going to be. And then you back that up with just raw perseverance, perseverance that just will not quit, and you will be successful. It's just that simple. It's not about your idea. It's not about anything else. It's about you make a decision what you want, and then you just decide you're not going to quit until you have it. Then you will not be stopped. You can't be stopped. And I believe it's like the universe has this baked-in governor, God, whatever spiritual entity you believe in. There is a persistence test that you have to pass. And it will not let you be successful until you pass the persistence test. And there's no way you're going to do that if you haven't made a definite decision. So that's what I would say is wherever you're at, just decide what you're going to do. Don't wait and see. If you take a wait and see approach, there's probably going to be a lot of waiting and not a lot of seeing. But just decide what you want and then just just don't quit.
You know, I love that, and I love it for a couple of reasons. Number one, I think it's super helpful for people because I think our success or lack of success is simply a choice. And then the second reason it's hitting me here is there's some things I won't go into now, but there's literally some things going on right now of decisions that I need to make. And I've been kind of like back and forth. And so I just appreciate it. It's like, you know what? I'm sitting here just listening for myself, selfishly, just going, you know what, Reber, you got to fucking make some decisions here today, like today. And it's funny, I'm usually pretty quick to make decisions, but there's a couple things going on right now that have been tough for me over the last week or so. So I appreciate the nudge, man. it's always good. So Todd, where can people find you? I know you got a great show. I know you help a lot of contractors, you coach and workshops and other things you have going on. Share a little bit about that and where people can find you if they want to get in touch.
Yeah. I appreciate that. My website is constructionleadingedge.com, and I have the Construction Leading Edge podcast. So if you're listening to this on a podcast player, then check out the Construction Leading Edge podcast. I'm on YouTube as well, Construction Leading Edge TV. And if you're specifically wondering about Profit Bleeds, which that episode has resonated with a lot of people. I get a lot of calls about that. Go check out episode 156, and you'll get a rundown of the 8 profit bleeds that I think the title is 8 profit bleeds that cause really busy contractors to lose money or something like that. But that's a good place to start. Hoard your profits, build your war chest up. Look at this thing as an opportunity, and keep trucking. There's a lot of problems that need to be solved out there. We need good, smart construction business owners and leaders out there to grow their business and be successful. So keep after it.
Well, good stuff, man. Well, I appreciate you taking the time to hang out with us here today. And I know some of what you shared today is going to help somebody get through a tough time right now, or if they're already really successful, they're going to help give them another little bit of an edge in what they're already doing, man. So I really appreciate it. It was good to have you back, and look forward to having you back in the future again, man.
Absolutely. Look forward to having you on my podcast too.
Sounds like a plan. So, all right, everybody, make sure that you hit the show notes, reach out to Todd, check out his show and all his other resources. He's got some good stuff over there. And until next time, Travis, bring in the guitars, and we'll talk to you guys next time on The Fight.
Want some fight swag to wear? Simply share this episode of The Contractor Fight anywhere on Facebook or Instagram using the hashtag #JoinTheFight, and our team will pick one winner each week to recognize your help in spreading the fight message.